75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the UFO Sighting Show, the UFO Files, and I'm Jerry Pippin. And, of course, since it's Crawfish, New Jersey, we have Larry Dickett. Spring is here. Still a little cool, though.
It definitely was cool up here today. Yes, yeah, spring is coming, though. We have daffodils and crocuses blooming, a lot of them. And, you know, we've had some warm weather here over the past week, and we're supposed to get some more along with, it's April, we get April showers.
That's right. Easter is early this year, not as early as it could be. I think I've seen it in March, or maybe my memory's failing me.
No, you're right.
But actually, the Ozark UFO Festival, which has been falling on Easter for a couple of years, or maybe more now, will be the week after Easter, middle of April,
right
there in Eureka Springs. And so we always look forward to that. That's a good sign that spring is here.
It certainly is, because every year you go there, the azaleas are in bloom, the dogwoods are in bloom. You know, that really is a beautiful little town.
The azaleas on our front yard are shining out there. They look good. We had a terrible freeze this year, but somehow most of the azalea plants made it.
Right.
It's amazing how some of these things come back in the spring. And there have a few people coming back to that Ozark Festival. Notice how I get into this. Linda Moten Howe will be back.
Right.
And she'll probably have some comments about that Chicago UFO sighting.
Yeah, along with Sam Morato from the MUFON organization in Illinois. He's going to have a detailed presentation about the O'Hare Airport sighting.
I'm not connected with that conference, but I noticed where NICAP's getting into the act. They say they're going to make a report on it.
Yeah, that's NARCAP.
Oh,
yeah.
NICAP.
Yeah, NICAP is
30 years ago.
Or more. Yeah, yeah. NICAP, they still have a site, interestingly
well,
enough.
Well, I mean,
Jerry.
These people are narco. They don't pay attention to the press, so I don't pay attention to them. So that's the way it goes.
Seems that's the case, yeah. But they promise that they're issuing a report soon. So when they do, I'm sure we'll all get to see it and see what they think.
Anyway, that Ozark Festival is always good. And we have several shows that we're going to try to start early. We saw some leftover shows from last year, and we always like to put those on. Gil McDonald, right, for sure will be on before that starts. He was not a speaker there, but he came all the way over from Missouri to tell us about some pretty horrible ET stories.
Yeah, if you want to talk about the eat me theory, he's really got some wild and woolly stuff.
Good show, and so that'll be up right around the Ozark time. If you're in the Eureka Springs area, it's worthwhile going. Bill Hamilton, you know, now lives in Kansas City, so he and his wife are coming over.
Right. That'll be good to for you, at least, to see Bill again. And
yeah, Bill's really jumped out of the UFO wagon and into the global warming truck. He's really pushing that. He's doing lots of good research on that.
Well, and I think he should. You know, we've talked about that before. That's certainly a problem that the world needs to deal with, and in terms of imminent problems for the human race, I think global warming is the big threat, not possible UFO invasions.
Speaking of global warming, Roswell is getting closer, and everybody's firming up their their schedules now for the 60th anniversary. In fact, the Muskogee Phoenix here in my little town, my hometown of Muskogee, Oklahoma, had a big editorial about Roswell this morning.
They did.
In the paper. David Girard had made a trip to Roswell, visited the UFO Museum. Roberta Scott told me that she thought that he went because we've done so many shows on it.
You know, they're reading and listening to our UFO file reports. That's interesting.
And so anyway, he talked about how the town gets behind the ETs, and he noted them. We've talked about it before, about even Walmart has ETs on their front.
Yes.
McDonald's has a flying saucer. And basically they're going to have, you know, it starts, the 4th is the middle of the week this time.
Right.
And that's on Wednesday. And the parade will be that night, I think. We'll be doing our broadcast from the Cover-Up Cafe each night, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, 6 until 9. So anyone that wants to come downtown to see the festivities, we're right down the street from the UFO Museum. We'll be there broadcasting. In fact, Rita Louise will be co-host on Friday night. We're going to simulcast her show and our show at the same time.
Hmm.
And she's got a live feed that comes out of there from 6 to 8, and her network's given her an extra hour to coincide with ours. And so on that Roswell page, we'll be turning shows around, much like we did in Laughlin, overnight.
Right.
And so we'll probably have a live link that Friday night, too, so you can hear the live shows. We will be at the Civic Center with a table on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I believe it's from 10 o'clock until 5 o'clock every day. It might be till 7 o'clock. The UFO Museum is open from 9 in the morning until 6. And they have some panels at night at 7 o'clock, a couple of panels of the UFO researchers.
Right. So they're not going to have speakers this year?
Oh, they got a great lineup. And I'll try to give you the lineup. It's over on my computer, which is halfway across the room.
Well, I had to run halfway across the room just a few minutes ago. So.
Daryl Sims will be there, actually with a group of people. They're going to go out and make another effort to find some leftover remains at the crash center at the scene.
At the site,
yeah,
right.
They're going to. Mm-hmm. They've got several big experts again. A couple of guys from Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And Daryl will be there, and a couple other people. University of New Mexico, you know, did something very similar at one time.
Right.
And that's being sponsored by the UFO Museum. And most of those speakers will be coming down to the Cover-Up Cafe in the evening to do shows with us if we're not in one of the panels at the UFO Museum. They're even having a street dance, I notice, I think on the 5th.
Is there going to be a costume dance?
I don't know. They were in costume, I don't remember.
Right, absolutely.
You know, we'll be at the Civic Center as well. We have a table, and you can buy Jerry Pippen UFO Files t-shirts and memorabilia. We'll have all of the books for sale and the Fast Walkers DVDs and the Phoenix Lights DVDs as well, and meeting people all day. And we'll do a couple of three shows from there as well at the
mm-hmm.
Civic Center.
Right.
And so we're going to be there for, you know, a long 3 hours every night at the Cover-Up Cafe and all day at the Civic Center. And then we'll drop by the UFO Museum. So Paul Davids, who we have an interview coming up with that we taped in Laughlin and did the Roswell series, will be the kickoff speaker at the UFO Museum on Thursday morning around 10 o'clock. And our show with Paul is very interesting. We talk about the state of the movie business today with UFOs. And I think you find those things of David has to say very interesting. Mr. David, it always confuses me when you're talking about a guy with two names.
Two first names, right.
On Riger will be there, or Rieger, I don't know how he pronounces his name for sure, at the UFO Museum. He'll be having several seminars and things. He's an interesting fellow. Yvonne Smith will be there as well. She's a good friend of Paula Harris. And Yvonne's a hypnotherapist. And we had an interview of Yvonne from Laughlin. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Paula Harris, Yvonne is over in Italy right now this week at a seminar there in which you're dealing with Roswell.
Yes, that's the Italian Roswell conference. And Paula, I think, has a lot to do with organizing that. And Yvonne is over there with her, and I noticed got an email from him and a picture.
The Paula will be with us at the Cover Up Cafe, by the way, every night.
Right.
And helping us out along with Rita Louise, and Jane Swartley will be there, one of our producers from Boulder. And, of course, Roberta Scott will be returning. She's been to every one of the Roswell things, I think, that we've done.
That's certainly true, yeah.
So, there'll be things going on at the UFO Museum every day, just like there will be down at the Civic Center. Guy Malone and his speakers, so they have a great lineup, too. And we have a link to that as well on our Roswell page. You can go check all of
them. Right.
And there's a new book out about Roswell, and they found some more people who were witnesses, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's the part that interests me, is that they seem to have uncovered some people who actually experienced the events, and I think we talked about that last show, the fact that we better get them while we can, because they have to be up in years.
Another one of the people making an appearance at the UFO Museum this year is James Kerrigan of MUFON.
And that's interesting that MUFON is getting a little more involved with the Roswell events. That's a good thing.
So basically, the way they work it at the UFO Museum is the speakers we talk about, they rotate. They're there more than one day. People are in and out of there all day long, you know.
I think we can, spend a couple of minutes here talking about the news of this past week of the release of UFO information by the French government. And this was interesting in one respect, is the keeper of the information is the French Space Agency, and not, one of the intelligence agencies or something of that nature, like it was here, where it was very much attached to the military. In France, the repository was with the French Space Agency. And it was established back in the mid-1950s, at least this version. Any reports that may have been filed prior to then, there might be some in the database, but the files themselves were first established in the mid-1950s. And they've been maintained up until the present time, and is my understanding that the files will continue to be maintained. Reports can still be submitted by anybody living in France or any of the military, commercial operations, airlines, whatever. Anybody that sees a UFO can still submit reports to the French Space Agency. And they will be put in to the database, and the database will remain open and free for inspection. And that is certainly a different policy than we have here in the United States, where the government still officially denies the fact that UFOs even exist, or that they have any interest in the subject, even though it...
Yeah, you follow this pretty closely. I keep getting, I guess, misinformation from, ABC News had a story, which they said there was 100,000, there were 100,000 reports, and you say that's not
true. No, there's approximately 1,600 reports, and, you know, each report has a file. It's like any reporting system, is that you can have various and sundry pieces of information that are attached to each sighting report. And of course, you know, if you have multiple witnesses, photographs, videos, whatever, each of those items are an item within the report file. So if somebody said there was an estimate of 100,000 items overall in the database of information, that certainly could be true. However, officially there are some 1,600 reports, which is very close to the number of reports that were in released by our government back in 1969 after the Condon Report. Project Blue Book files were released, and those reports, they numbered in the range of 2,000 to 3,000. And of course, there have been several other governments that have released their reports recently. The British last year released their report files, and the Brazilian government released theirs as well.
Well, the Brazilian government released some. They say that there's more, but I haven't heard anything else come out.
No, we haven't. And interesting thing is that when you look at all of these releases, you know, you're seeing just a few thousand reports over a period of 50 to 60 years in some cases. Now, of course, our release was back in 69, so... it basically covered the years from 47, which were not the first sightings ever recorded in the United States, but that's sort of, you know, when things got kicked off, number one, due to Roswell, and the other sighting that occurred up in Washington State. Sort of the
Arnold sighting, the Kenneth Arnold. You talk about this... this whole thing, at least people are reporting something now. Like you, I think you're pretty suspicious. I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but you can correct me if I'm wrong. But from talking to you about this, we have talked about it. You figure that's the best way to cover things up, is just release some information, kind of like Blue Book.
Right. You know, it's you sort of like get people off your back. Now, you know, our government's take on that was. A little bit different. In other words, put it out, say it doesn't amount to anything. There are some unknown sightings. Our government admitted that there was about a few percent of the sightings that were of interest because they were totally unexplainable. However, they did not deem it to be a subject of interest to them anymore. And they did not think it was in any way a problem concerning national security. So they said, we're done investigating. Now, we know that's not really true, but that's the wording that was put out many, many years ago. Now, the governments that have done recent releases of their files have not been quite that specific. And, of course, the British government did make a statement that national security issues were definitely not involved in UFOs. So they pretty much followed our line. The French, as I said, it's a little different this time because their files are being maintained To date, anything new that's reported will be added to these files, and they will remain open to the public. So that's a little more freedom of information oriented, in that, you know, the books aren't being closed and forgotten. They're going to be maintained and open to the public.
Well, now, you know, you mentioned Roswell again, and that's what we were talking about. And I need to mention some other things about the UFO Museum. They always have a pop culture element. I don't know if you realize that or not, but each year they have a movie star, somebody connected with a famous sci-fi movie.
Right.
And this year it's the War of the Worlds movie.
Uh-huh.
And Anne Robinson is going to be there.
Right.
Now, I don't know, was Anne in this latest movie, or...
Anne Robinson, I think that name sounds familiar.
Yeah,
I think she was the female lead in the original movie.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I'm sorry, folks. I'm not up with that.
We'll have to look that up and find out specifically. But, I sort of have a feeling that might be the case. And because... I don't recall that being, there. You really didn't have a leading woman figure in Spielberg's version of the movie. I mean, you know, the man had the lead had a wife, but she was up in Boston and he was down in New Jersey, and they were divorced. So she really didn't have much of a part in the movie. So a little different approach.
Freddie Silva will be there as well at the UFO Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an interview of Freddie Silva that we taped last year that will be up. The Roswell series will resume in, right after Eureka Springs. We have a lot of shows, and we're going to probably be running 2 and 3 a week here to get caught up before the new Roswell shows start in July.
Right.
And in the business they call it stunting, where you keep increasing the frequency of the shows. Cable TV's famous for that.
Right.
And we're doing it probably not for the same reason. We're doing it out of necessity to catch up.
We have a lot.
But the effort itself does build interest.
Right.
And, you know, we'd be remiss. We're talking about festivals. Farrah Godoza spoke up at Aztec, and she took a lot of pictures, got a lot of interviews. We have 2 or 3 hours. We're not sure how much on Aztec that'll be coming out here sometime in April, probably. First part of May at the latest. That they had a 10th anniversary up there.
Right. Yeah, it was too bad we couldn't be there to cover it, but we certainly had one of our associates there, and I'm expecting to have a whole Aztec section for the first time with a number of interviews and very interesting photographs.
And we have an interview with Scott and Suzanne Ramsey about that entire thing. He's probably the number one Aztec researcher as well. That'll be posted, so that the Aztec people may have felt neglected, but we're going to catch up.
Well, why don't we, we have a little bit different take on the rest of the show tonight. We're certainly going to do UFO reports, but it's only going to be a couple of reports because of the length of the reports themselves. But they're such excellent reports, I thought that we should home in on those and give them a lot of attention. And we'll start out with Rick's Picks, which is the shortest of the three. And so while I'm covering Rick's Pick for this week, you can continue to look.
Okay, I'm ready for to get it out of the way. Tom Carey and Don Schmidt have a new book out about Roswell.
Uh-huh.
And they're both at the UFO Museum every year, naturally. And so it's going to be very interesting this year. They've done a lot of premier research. Paul David was telling me that this book has some information in it that no one else had ever found out.
Uh-huh.
But Schmidt and Carey have put it together, and it'll be released, the book, about the same time that the celebration starts.
Well, that's quite interesting. So they've got some new details about the event that we haven't heard before.
And then, of course, we would be remiss if we didn't mention that Dr. Bruce McAbee will be there.
Right. Well, that's sort of a first. Has he been out there before?
I don't think so. I don't know. Hey, he's at the UFO Museum this year.
Right. Yeah, I know that he had some experiences out in New Mexico himself.
Yeah, on our show, we talked to him in great detail about that.
Right.
If you want to go over to the gallery of guests and click on his picture.
Right. Most interesting show.
And also, it's in the Avery section.
Right.
So anyway, let's get to Rick's picks, and maybe I'll get my voice back.
All right. This report occurred in 1985, October, and it was reported in 2000, about 2 years later. It comes from Swansboro, North Carolina, and the sighting occurred close to midnight, not quite, almost 11:45 to 11:50, about 5 minutes of duration. And here it is. My sister and I observed a disc for about 5 minutes hovering approximately 120 feet away. Now, you know, I'm always telling people, you know, give us those reports and photographs of things that are, you know, a couple of hundred feet away or closer. Well, this is certainly the case. I don't have a photograph, but I've got a report. 120 feet away. That's very close. My sister and I were watching the Johnny Carson show. When a commercial came on, my sister got up to go to the kitchen. To get to the kitchen from the den, she had to walk right next to a set of sliding glass doors that run parallel to the White Oak River, apparently not too many yards away from the back of their house. She yelled for me to come into the kitchen to look at something. She had to call several times because she does the same thing at the sight of a cockroach. She is clearly an over-exaggerator. This time, however, she had spotted something much bigger than a cockroach. As it turned out, I looked through the glass over the river, and I caught my first sight of a black disc that must have been 30 feet in diameter, about 10 feet thick in the middle, and tapering to about 3 feet thick on the circumference. And one can say, well, this is around midnight. How did she see a black disc over the river? Well, we'll explain that here. The craft was hovering about 50 feet above the water and approximately 120 feet from my sister and I. That put our vantage point at just slightly above the craft when I noticed that the moon was reflecting off of its semi-gloss black finish. In other words, this probably was the night of a full moon, so even though this thing was black, it had sort of a shine to it. It was reflecting some moonlight, and it stood out over the river itself, and that's how it became quite visible. We were stunned, but not afraid. We slid the large glass door open and walked out into the first floor deck. The first strange thing I noticed was the complete absence of noise. The craft was literally hovering noiselessly in front of me. That is when the gravity of the situation hit me. living between Cherry Point Air Force Base and Camp Lejeune Marine Corps Base, it was not unusual for aircraft to fly directly over the house. In fact, it seemed that the Marine Corps had mapped a low-altitude helicopter route directly over my house. Helicopters do, however, make an unmistakable noise, which would have been nearly unbearable at the range we were from this noiseless black disk. My sister and I walked across the deck and down the stairs onto the concrete driveway, which was littered with shattered hickory nuts that had been run over by my mother's Buick. The reason that I mention the hickory nuts is because I was barefooted at the time, and the only thing that distracted...
Have you ever walked on the shells for bare feet?
I can imagine it would be quite painful.
I've done it before.
Right. And so she says she's walking barefooted there, and the only thing that distracted me from the noiseless black disc was the incessant pricking on the bottoms of my feet. But she was obviously so engrossed in the disc that, you know, pain wasn't on her mind. It was for this reason that my sister and I walked off the driveway onto the grass. Since I'd moved about 90 degrees horizontally and about 20 degrees vertically and about 30 feet closer, it was fairly clear that the object was taking up three-dimensional space. In other words, she could see that it was a real solid object. From the time that my sister called me to come to see the object to the time that we were standing in the grass was a matter of about 2 minutes. We stood in the grass for about a minute, which was also happens to be the amount of time that we watched the craft before it left. During that 1 minute, things went from being strange to being inexplicable. The craft began to move slightly more into the bay and away from us, but it wavered a bit horizontally. After about 30 seconds of that, it moved further out into the channel of the river. At this position, it was equidistant from the shore and from the White Oak River Bridge, of the two bridges, the bridge on the Swansboro side. Now, you know, all of this is describing an area which is like a river that empties out into, I would suspect, Chesapeake Bay. And it says, as it left, it said, finally, as it slowly moved toward the bridge, it gained speed so quickly that its path was traced with a streak of light. As it left, it moved forward much faster than upward, but it did move upward and to the left. When I say it gained speed quickly, I mean that it was gone in a matter of a tenth of a second. When the last minute of the observation of the craft was over, the first minute of discovering its effect had begun. Immediately I heard the noise of masses of minnows jumping in the water. My sister and I walked down onto the dock to investigate the seemingly amplified noise. What we discovered was a large area of foam. In fact, the water seemed to be boiling. All around us, the minnows were jumping. Normally, minnows swim in schools of about 30 to 60, which might measure 5 square feet in surface area. While in school, each minnow acts as one, so that when one is scared, the entire school is scared. I have been in a situation where maybe 5 schools of minnows will be jumping at the same time because I jumped onto the dock, but never before and never since have I seen so many minnows jumping in the river. In retrospect, I would have put my toes in the water to see if it was hot, but I didn't. I've often wondered if the thick foam on top of the water was caused by all of the minnows jumping, or if all the minnows were jumping because the water was so foamy and perhaps hot. At that point, approximately 7 minutes had passed and my mother came outside. My sister and I told her what had happened, and she was too tired to care. A few minutes after the experience, I drew what I had seen with crayons for a science teacher, and I bet he still has it somewhere. At the time, my sister was 13 years old, and I was only 8 years old. My sister and I have talked about it since, just after it happened. During my education at a state-supported university, I realized how contradictory what I had seen is to contemporary physics. The truth is going to be nice.
Well, craft didn't go in the water, did it?
No. They only observed it hovering above the water. But, you know, with electromagnetic effects that apparently accompany UFOs hovering over the ground, it's quite possible that the water was literally being heated up. Certainly disturbed the fish.
Well, we hear of UFOs and water quite often, and we're not sure what the connection is.
Right.
To be the ETs want a drink. Or it could be that they need water for whatever. And maybe you're just taking it on board. We've talked about that before.
Well, and there have actually been a number of sightings where UFOs hover over rivers, the ocean, much more so over freshwater, you know, like lakes and whatnot. And people have actually seen what appears to be water being sucked up into the bottom of the UFO. And the thing is just like any other living being, they need water.
Okay, you had a couple of long reports here. Rick
right.
always finds something interesting, by the way. He's been quite an asset to us.
Right. Yeah, we have a set of reports that came in from New Fork, and they all occurred on the same night.
Now, this is Peter Davenport?
Right.
Okay.
All occurred on the same night, 11/28/06. Almost 6 months ago. And the reports came in from Alabama, Tennessee, North Carolina, Georgia. And there was also a report way up in Alaska, which does it have any bearing on these or not is totally unknown. But it's the same description. And it was of peculiar green lights moving across the sky. And there's been a lot of reports over the past several years of green meteors. Or green fireballs, and this is not the case here, is that the lights are green, but they in no way resemble meteorites or fireballs. So I don't think I have any specifics on the report from Alaska, and I'm sort of keeping that separated, but all the others come from an area in the southeast U.S. and would seem to be related, both in terms of time and the specific date in which they occurred. Here's the first report. It comes from Hayden, Kentucky. Lights appeared far away. I thought it was some type of fireworks. As it got closer, I knew it wasn't any type of firework I had ever seen. I first saw it far away, and as I got closer, or the object got closer to me, it appeared to be a line of bluish-green lights. When it got close, the lights started moving from front to back in a circular motion. There were about 7 or 8 of these lights as it got close to me. So it would appear that you have something like a disc with 7 or 8 lights on the edge, and it's being observed to rotate as it approaches the observer. There was absolutely no sound, and it ultimately went across, flew across a mountainside. There were 2 other people besides me that saw this tonight. So that's report number 1. Now, this occurred at about 1:30 a.m. Excuse me, take that back, wrong time. This occurred at approximately 5 o'clock on the 28th of November.
A.m. or p.m.?
P.m.
Okay.
And then we have the next report that comes in at 7 o'clock at night. On the 28th. This is from Dacula, Georgia. And that's not Dracula, it's Dacula. There was a rapid movement of an object that traveled from northeast to southwest. A bright green object, which resembled a shooting star, but, you know, only in the fact that it was moving very rapidly. We would have assumed it was a shooting star, except that it came to near stops twice and then rapidly moved to the next position before moving behind a tree line. A broken cloud level was approximately 5,000 feet above the ground. The object itself was below this cloud cover. Certainly, you know, starting and stopping and hovering and zooming around and being below 5,000 feet is not a meteor. And as I said, notice that these events all occur within a few hours of each other. Then we go to the most extensive report from Columbus, Georgia. And this occurred at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the 29th. It was actually almost 24 hours later. And I see an inconsistency here, is that when they put the report into the database, it's listed as 11:29, but in the text of the report itself, it says on the afternoon, which would be 4 o'clock, of 28 November. So the date is incorrect, and it is the same date and within several hours of the other reports that we gave. So on the afternoon of November the 28th, according to the police and fire chief of Columbus, Georgia, several credible witnesses stated that they saw something shiny and bright crash into a wooded area directly behind the Pratt and Whitney plant, just off US 80. Now, remember, this is 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The other two reports were a couple of hours later in the evening, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and they were further west, over in Kentucky. So you say, well, maybe something crashed and maybe other objects that were similar were in that area of the southeast U.S. Certainly seems to be a connection here. So going on with this pretty detailed report, scores of police and fire department people and at least one FAA official raced to the scene. This account can be seen on the WTVM Channel 9 Columbus, Georgia website. Now, I don't know that you could see it if you search for it now, 6 months later, but it certainly was something that had the whole town in an uproar. The search was joined by personnel from Fort Benning, Georgia, the Georgia State Police, and several unidentified, quote, personnel. According to the officials, after searching for over 5 hours, including the use of helicopters. Nothing was found. Now remember, this is an object that appeared to crash into the woods behind the Pratt & Whitney plant. Says, according to officials, the search occurred over 5 hours, nothing being found. In addition, the fire chief made a statement to the local news that sometimes people see what they think is something, and it really is nothing. Yeah, well, if that isn't a cover-up statement, I don't know what is. Sounds like chief's not too bright. At any rate, several large tractor trailers were seen going into the area, which had been contained by police. According to the local press, the witnesses, which are supposed to have been interviewed by the local police on Wednesday, the following day, all stated that something, quote, crashed, and it appeared to be a bright, shiny object traveling at high speed. Not only that, it had this bluish-green color. Interestingly, the police, fire, and FAA official stated on the next day that neither the local Columbus Metropolitan Airport or Fort Benning Lawson Army airfield radar had shown any sign of any craft or object on the radar at the supposed time of impact. But I spoke to the head weather reporter for the local TV station, who told me that his station has their own radar, and, very interestingly, it showed something striking the area at approximately the time given. Further, I and another professional educator, we both have PhDs, which the Peter, great credence to their report, but as you can see, it is a very detailed report. And these two gentlemen were traveling next to Columbus Metro Airport at approximately 1 p.m. on Wednesday, the next day. Note that this airport is less than 3 miles from the supposed crash site, when both I and the other professor saw a completely unmarked white 727 jet land at Columbus Airport. As the plane taxied by us, in other words, they're on a roadway parallel to the runway.
I bet you everything went dead.
Well, yeah, sort of.
That's kind of what happens. White vans and white 727s.
Right, or white anything that belongs to our government. at any rate, as the plane taxied by us, we were no more than 100 feet from the plane, which was slightly above us at an angle moving towards the main compound. My companion's vehicle lost all power. All gauges went dead. Power steering, engine, everything, and we glided to a stop. We both exited the vehicle thinking something mechanically had gone wrong with his vehicle. At that moment, the plane began to slowly pass us as it was taxiing from the main runway. I picked up my cell phone to call a mechanic and found that my cell phone was dead. My companion's cell phone was also dead. We both watched the plane as it went by us. Both of us are veterans and have traveled many times on 727s. Almost at the same moment, we both spoke because we noticed that the plane had no markings of any kind, no tail numbers, nothing. The plane had a strange finish and almost looked, excuse the obvious pun, whitewashed. When the plane got approximately 100 feet from us, my companion's car restarted for no apparent reason or damage of any kind. In addition, both my cell phone and my companion's came back on. We're both academic professors and are empiricists. In other words, they need evidence before drawing conclusions. We have never been involved in any such thing before. I immediately attempted to call the airport to inquire about the plane. I was connected, I don't know why this particular number, to the fire police crash station. I started to ask the man who answered about the plane.
Well, you know that whitewash on the airplane could be some sort of electronic radar repellent stuff?
Presumably. You know, that it has something to do with trying to make the craft invisible to radar, I would suspect. Interestingly, that the effects that they observed as the plane passed close to them and then got farther away were identical to effects that people report from UFOs. And I'm not saying that this was a UFO in disguise, looking like a plane taxiing down the runway, but it is interesting that we seem to have some capability to jam electromagnetic type devices that we have, anything that runs on electricity. There could be a good reason for that. It could be that that's a way of preventing people from taking any action, making any phone calls, trying to go somewhere too quickly while this thing is still visible. Basically isolates people until the thing is gone. And that's probably the intent. So at any rate, continuing with the report, as they called this individual at the airport, the person who answered rudely cut me off and stated, quote, "This is a private plane, thank you," and hung up. Approximately 30 minutes later, I arrived home and I decided to call the local aviation company, which sells fuel and such, and is next to the main terminal. It is called CSG Aviation. A young woman answered, and I inquired about the plane. She was obviously very young and most likely just a simple desk help. I asked about the 727, quote, private plane, at which time she corrected me and told me, oh no, that was a government plane. Hmm. I asked how she knew that, and she said that it had picked up something which was loaded into its rear section, and then it was refueled. A man in a coat and a tie came from the plane and paid for the fuel with a credit card, which had on it U.S. Treasury and an account number. She said that's how she knew it was a government plane.
Secret Service.
It would appear. An additional call to the airport administration office confused me further. At the time, I was now told I was mistaken. There was absolutely no plane, much less a 727, that had landed or taken off during the time period I gave. In other words, the secrecy had set in. People obviously saw a plane, probably more people than just these two guys. But now, if anybody's asking about it, it never existed. But luckily, the young lady who took the payment for the refueling said she saw everything that happened, and yes, it was a government operation. We have a huge military base here with its own airport. Logic states that this was something military, and they would have taken it to Fort Benning. I'm trying to get witness statements from the police. You know, they said, as we mentioned earlier, there were police and firemen, local police and firemen, at the, quote, crash site. I firmly believe that something was found and recovered, and that it was taken from Columbus the next day in a strange and unexplained ghost plane that my friend and I saw. I was also told that during the same period that debris was reported striking areas around Montgomery, Alabama, approximately 100 miles from here. Now remember, one of our other reports was from Alabama. Same time frame. I have never been involved or even interested in anything like this, but circumstances have changed that. So, what do you think of that, Jerry?
I think it's a good way to end the show. Our time is up. You know, I don't know, other than obviously it was a government plane, probably funded by the Treasury Department somehow. And why the military didn't land and take that is beyond me. Maybe, I mean, I don't know.
Maybe things have changed. We've heard a lot of reports of, you know, white FEMA vehicles, not necessarily planes, but certainly ground vehicles in the area of apparent UFO crashes. Now, I remember a couple of years ago Ohio.
Right, they probably privatized everything.
Right. And
they're probably a black ops company that does that now.
Right. The military may not even be involved anymore, as is the case in a lot of things.
Right. Well, all I can say is watch out for those white 727s.
Yes. And keep your eyes to the skies. I'm wondering, before we leave, I do want to say that, you know, I had an intention of giving another report from Brian Vike. We will cover that next time on our next show. It is an extremely interesting report from the 1970s that has Brian quite intrigued, and I'm sure it will have our listeners intrigued as well.
What's a good tease for the next show? Until the next time, I guess I'll close out the regular way. Watch out for flying saucers. Good night.
Okay, keep your eyes to the skies. Good night.
I'm a spaceman, and I just got in from space. A spaceman. I'm looking for the human race. A spaceman. I heard a whisper, it was here. I'm a spaceman.